You see in chapter 5.
Jairus, who believed that he could heal his daughter.
Jairus, who believed that Jesus, this teacher, had the ability to heal his daughter. Let's take that one more step. What happened when Jesus finally came to the house? The daughter had died. The house was filled with screechers and mourners, as was the custom. They were lamenting her death. What did Jesus do? Why are you making such a racket? She's only sleeping. Was the girl sleeping? Jesus said she was, so she was sleeping. Well, was it a normal sleep or was she dead? The 35th verse, thank you, Barbara, says that the daughter was dead. Who pronounced her dead? That's a good question.
I guess I would take Christ's word over the others that he said she has not died.
Interesting. So there's some thoughts here we need to look in when we get to that passage. What else do you see there?
The people laughed at Jesus when he said that she was just sleeping because they thought that she was dead.
Death is often referred to as what? Sleep. So, I think the way I read it is that Jesus is using aphemerism. What's the word I'm trying to use? Is it a Jack word? It must be a Jack word. He dreamed it up. Is using the kindler, gentler word for death. Other passages, not all will be asleep, I think is what Paul said, when Christ returned again, but all will meet in the air. Go ahead, Nina, you have a comment?
When they were going to see Lazarus, Jesus told the apostles that Lazarus was sleeping. But he really meant that he was dead. So I don't know that we know if she was alive or dead.
I think verse 35 seals it in my mind, and Jesus is using that kindler, gentler thought of sleep. I see Jairus as being the first century equivalent of Abraham. Genesis chapter 22, when God told Abraham to offer up his only son, the son of promise, what was the faith of Abraham? He was going to do it. He did it. Why? What did he say?
Even if he did.
Knew that God would raise him up a son from the very rocks around about him. If that's what God wanted to do, God's going to keep his promise. Raise Isaac up. So there's a deeper element of faith there that I see in Jairus than just a well-wisher. Any other comments? Other thoughts on faith? Jesus told Jairus not to be afraid, but to believe. Verse 36. Cheryl, you got a comment? You had a look on your face.
Okay, this is odd, but did the demon have faith? He knew who Jesus was. He knew he was the Son of God. He had no hope, but he knew who he was, but he didn't follow. I mean, unclean spirits, demons do not follow the will of God. But in some ways, it's faith, but it's faith without following the will of God or with hope of eternal salvation.
What? Okay. Oh goodness.
In Mark 5:1, the insane hermit, he believed, he ran up to him.
Ran up to him? David, and then Ed, please.
I don't think legions was faith. It was knowledge. He knew. We have faith. He knew.
The difference between faith which brings forth fruit and the knowledge. I like that. Thank you for bringing that up.
Well, along the same way, when we get to the spiritual state, now abideth faith, hope, and charity. And faith and hope will pass away, like David said, and we'll live in knowledge, but charity will live forever. So did that spiritual being have faith? No, he had a fearful dread, a fearful knowledge of his fate eternally.
Good observations, and I appreciate your thoughts on this. I did not ask this question lightly, because I think that there's a lot of faith written in chapter 5. And as we started looking at last week, Jesus and his disciples, they crossed the lake to the region of the Gerasenes, and Jesus got out of the boat, and as was already pointed out, a man with an evil spirit came running to him out of the tombs to meet him. The man lived in the tombs, no one could bind him anymore, and he'd been not even with a chain, for he had been chained hand and foot, and he tore the chains apart, and he broke apart the irons. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day, he stayed in the tombs. We talked a little bit about this last week. We talked about his crying out. He was disoriented, wandering in anguish. He had no true purpose. That death stalks those without a true purpose. He cuts himself. And so one could say that he is suicidal. But then we talked a little bit about there are other examples of people who out of great fervor, who cut themselves to appease images, I guess every time I think about that event there with Elijah and the 450 prophets of Baal, I think of the Pacific Islanders with their gods made out of stone that had to have fruit brought to their god. Was rocks going to eat the fruit? No. But they did that to appease their god. Weird. I mean, well, unique, I shouldn't say weird. The man was totally out of control in verse 4. He was chained hand and foot, living among the tombs. Well, we talked about that. Next passage. And he fell on his knees in front of Jesus. He shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Swear to God that you won't torture me." Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you evil spirit." Well, we've talked a little bit before in Mark chapter 1 about how this phrase, what do you want with me, is kind of like a slam. It's kind of like, yeah, you and whose army? Trying to put another person into place or control another person. There's examples that we've talked about that. Those of you that have taken notes, you'll remember these passages. Joshua chapter 22, verse 24. Judges chapter 11, verse 12. 1 Samuel chapter 16 and 10. 19 and verse 22. And of course, 1 Kings chapter 17, verse 18. Son of the Most High. Son of the Most High is not a unique phrase. This phrase was used by who? Who was that priest without beginning or end? Melchizedek. Yet he referred to Abraham, the servant of the Most High God. In Genesis chapter 14, verses 18 and following. And of all people who would use that phrase, the Most High God, who is the most despicable person you could use that phrase? He tried to curse God's people. He was paid to do so. Who? Nebuchadnezzar used that same phrase of that trio, Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego, when he talked about the servants of the Most High. Did he believe it? Didn't show in his actions, did he? So, I don't know how much weight's really put in 16, Acts chapter 16, and in verse 17. There was a little servant girl that was going around Paul saying, "He is the servant of the Most High God. He's the servant of the Most High God. He's the servant of the Most High God." What did Paul say? Shut up. Be quiet. Whine. why this thought of shutting down the praises of the Most High God if they're sincere and if they are heartfelt.
A bad spirit had come into her that was causing her to talk like that.
This guy didn't have a bad spirit? Yeah. So did the evil spirits believe in the Most High God? Did they honor him as the Most High God? Believed and trembled, but not obeyed. I'm sorry? They did not honor him. Well, I just didn't want to make too much out of this in Mark chapter 5. Yes, they said, Jesus, what do you want with me, Son of the Most High God? But are they acknowledging him for who he is? Or are they trying to put him in his place?
It's probably more like mockery.
That's kind of what I'm thinking about. Kind of a little bit of a mockery. Okay, you're the boss. What are you going to do? Now he follows that with the very next thought. And the very next thought is, swear by God Almighty. What? Swear to God that you won't torture me. Is this an affirmation to Jesus, to his authority? Perhaps. Jesus had said to the man, or to the spirits, come out of the man. Then Jesus asked, what is your name? Legion. Legion? Well, yes, there's that military term for what? A legion. A legion is what? 1,000 soldiers? 6,000. Ask the experts. Here I am reading Julius Caesar in my spare time, and I turn my mind up. The phrase appears to be more of a taunting of Jesus to disarm the stronger, to gain control. Swear to God you will not torture me. What is your name? Contrary to the Hollywood version, evil must be enfleshed. It's incarnated. Jesus does not encounter floating apparitions or disembodied spirits. Evil is not abstract. It's solid. It's real. What is your name? It dwells in people. It grips human beings and allow it to run rampant, unchecked like a fever, until it destroys its hope. Why is it so popular today to paint abstract pictures of evil? Why do so many only conceive of evil in dramatic ways? When we talk about evil today, who is the first name that comes to mind? Pardon me?
The Antichrist.
Antichrist? That's not the one I was thinking of. I'm sorry? Satan? ISIS? ISIS was what's getting close to what I was saying. The first name that comes off the tip of my tongue when I think of evil is Hitler. First name. Why? So that evil is personified. It is plain, it is plain. Jesus tries to clarify. What is your name? Oh, we're Legion. We're nameless. We're so many of us, we don't have a bunch of names. Evil's trying to be nefarious. Oh, it's not really evil. It's not all that bad. Each one's just a little bit different. The confrontation. The man who normally avoided people ran to Jesus. This is the first step toward finding a true life purpose, coming to the source of a resolution. Note what was the answer when Jesus asked the name, Legion. A number, just a number, but a number found in strength. But the name is not strictly a purely Latin term. It is found in Hellenistic Greek. It is found in Aramaic Greek. By using this name, it could be an appeal for compassion due to pathetic admission to its loss of identity. We're not really evil. We're just confused. We're misunderstood. We're just out of control. Or it could be a power play. We are mighty. Might makes right. There are too many for one person, any one person, to oppose. Or it could be an attempt, again, to thwart the power of Jesus, the Son of God. This man was possessed by a collection of uncoordinated impulses and forces. Having no unity of will, he falls to his knees in frustration, confession, and petition. The second step in finding a life purpose is surrender. The pigs on the mountainside is not a strange picture, not for this area. The Decapolis was predominantly Gentile population and a pagan environment. The demons begged Jesus, send us into the pigs, allow us to go into them. He gave them permission, and the evil spirits went into the pigs. The herd of about 2,000 in number rushed down a steep bank into the lake and were drowned. The healing, the third step, out of this self-destructive world, the man surrenders to not only the one who can provide hope, meaning, and purpose. Jesus allows the demons to continue, but continue in their purpose and in attempting to destroy God's creation, trying to destroy not only the image of God, man made in the image of God, Genesis chapter 1, verse 26, but then into God's own creation, the pigs. Not to be thwarted, they went. But the final vanquishing of demon spirits was not here in the day of Jesus. It's not until the final day. In Revelation chapter 20, we read about the final vanquishing of those evil spirits. How did our time get away from us so fast? Well, we'll start here, Lord willing. If you'll look again at Mark chapter 5 and see if there's some other thoughts that you want to bring out in regards to faith. Chad, do you have one?
While there were many of them, in the 35th verse, said all the devils besought him, saying they functioned as one, although there were many, but they still had the same thinking, functioned as one.
Other thoughts, comments? Mark chapter 5 is rich. It is full of thought that we can grow from. There's no other thoughts. Let's conclude a word of prayer.